Welcome to the Minimum Effective Dose Podcast, where we discuss the art, science, and application of high-performance strength and conditioning. Join Mike Perry and Brett Jones as they share invaluable experiences veteran strength coaches, lecturers, and educators. Welcome to Season 4 of the Minimum Effective Dose Podcast. And we are back with another episode of the Minimum Effective Dose Podcast. I am here with the man, the myth, Brett. Hey, what's new in your life these days, Brett? How are you?
I am fine. I'm fine. I'm busy, but I'm fine. But I did manage to watch the new Roadhouse, as we discussed on our last episode. And I know you're only partway through, but We'll give a 30-second review, and then once you've had a chance to finish it, we'll give our full thoughts. But
all right.
I gave it a chance. I went in not wanting to like it, but I like it. Really high level. It's hard not to like Jake Gyllenhaal. He just seems like an approachable, nice guy. I mean, especially in this film in particular. I mean, he's done some stuff.
He's a talented individual.
He's very talented. But in this, it was like he was just Jake. Not Jake from State Farm, but, you know, he was just Jake. And he was very approachable. And you just liked him. Conor McGregor, I think they're doing him a disservice. I think they've got him playing such a caricature of himself. It would be like Dwayne Johnson going on screen as The Rock.
You're right.
They didn't do that. Now, did Dwayne Johnson do some roles that were over the top and leaned into his experience with professional wrestling? Sure. But that's never what they did, right? I think the way they're treating Conor McGregor is a disservice to what I think Conor McGregor might be capable of doing. He is such an over-the-top villain in this that it takes away from the entire film. Now, on the one hand, are there entertaining scenes? Sure. But on the other hand, it's like, yeah, this guy, it's just, I don't like what they're doing with him as an actor when he gets these opportunities. Will I watch it again? Yes. Because there's good action. It's entertaining. So yeah, that's my
if you know, yelling louder at one level is a lot easier than having nuance in your voice, right? So for him, right, think about it though. I mean, the guy hasn't really acted a ton, and he's basically, his job was to play this larger than life villain. And if you look at this movie, that's kind of what it was. It was like the original, like on steroids. Like literally, that's what it was. Everything was bigger. Everything was badder. And again, I saw half of it, so I'll have to see the second half. But yeah, so far that's what I was getting as well. So I can honestly say that was my feel from the get go. But I will follow up again when I see the remainder of that movie. But until we get paid to do movie reviews, we're going to be talking about training
something else.
We're going to talk about aha moments. And this is something that Brett and I were discussing earlier about sort of what are three sort of, wow, like sort of big moments in your career or lessons or conversations or whatever it is that had a really, really positive impact on the way that you looked at anything, teaching, coaching, movement, programming, you name it. So Brett, do you want me to get rolling or do you want to start?
I kind of got one queued up. I'll roll with.
Let's hear it.
So I came out of being an athletic trainer, really not having a lot of education in training per se. With athletic training, you're very concerned with learning all of the emergency management stuff, knowing how to spine board people, handle fractured this, dislocated that. Cervical injuries, whatever. Like there's a lot of emergency management. There's a lot of orthopedic evaluation, rehabilitation. Now that orthopedic evaluation rehabilitation has played a major part of my career moving forward, but there wasn't a lot of training information per se. Yes, we took exercise phys. That was just the course you suffered through to get through the athletic training, you know, other stuff. So when I came into running a hospital fitness center and entering into the fitness world, you know, I kind of did a little bit of everything. I got into functional training. I got into the one set to failure HIIT Jedi. I got into body weight only training. You know, I kind of did a variety of things. And a group of us, athletic trainers and people that worked in and around this clinic, decided we were going to go to one of the first Perform Better, Learn by Doing seminars. And I think it was either Columbus or Cincinnati, or it was cold and snowy. That's what I remember.
Fair enough.
And Juan Carlos Santana and Diane Vivas were up on stage. And at this time, I'm deep into the one set to failure HIIT Jedi thing. And Juan Carlos is up there doing his thing. And at a certain point, he just, you know, just part of the presentation, he just goes, look, muscles are dumb. They only do what the neurological system tells them to do. And I'm like, yeah, but he's right. So at that point, you know, one set to failure, your maximum stimulation of the muscle fiber going to failure, you know, all of these holy grails crumble away, because in the end, neurological system, muscles are dumb. Slow twitch fibers are only slow twitch because the nerve that innervates them is a slow twitch, has the slow twitch properties. If you take a slow twitch fiber and insert it into give it a fast twitch nerve, it becomes a fast twitch fiber. Like, it's the neurological system rules. And so that was one of those watershed moments where I went, oh man, I gotta let go of some things. I gotta rethink what I'm doing. And fortunately, this was early. This was really early in my transition into training and fitness. And I was in those early years, and I see this happen with a lot of trainers. The early years are what's next. You take certification X, Y, Z, P, Q, R, S, T. You know, you keep accumulating this information, never giving yourself time to embrace it, practice it, move forward with it. But fortunately, this was early and allowed me to kind of pump the brakes for a second and go, wait a second. Absolutely right. Muscles are dumb. They only do what the neurological system tells them to do.
That is a perfect segue to what I was going to say, but it's same but different. So early on, I took a bunch of courses from Z Health, and it was very, very heavy on the nervous system, especially the first course, which was our phase. And a lot of it was isolated joint mobility, right? Which can be absolutely beneficial given the right situation, right individual. But it was very, very heavy on kind of neurology 101. And I can honestly say I haven't been to that course in forever, but from the standpoint of education, from learning about the nervous system, I can honestly say that the Z Health R phase course for me, and again, not so much about the joint mobility stuff, but about the really, really good information on the brain and the nervous system, is probably one of the most impactful courses I've ever taken. And that for me was like a highlight moment of the importance of the nervous system, because at that same time, I was hearing Gray and the whole FMS crew talk about hardware versus software. And I'll be brutally honest, I didn't quite understand it to the extent that they did. But, you know, once I learned more about the nervous system and how it really does govern everything, and I started to, you know, dig a little bit deeper into some of the stuff that we learned at FMS, regional interdependence, hardware issues, software issues, motor control issues, stability, mobility, all those things that sort of work together, I realized that, you know, the nervous system really does run the show. And a lot of the times, really what we're trying to do is manipulate the stimulus to the nervous system. And that's what we're trying to do, right? Especially if you're trying to improve mobility, right? I used to be like, you should use this tool or you should do this. Now I say these are, I call it tools for tone, right? You can use whatever tool you want to downregulate the tone. Now, look, if you have experience in dry needling and it's in your scope of practice, dry needling is a fantastic way to downregulate tone after the needles are in and down the road a little bit. But point being is there are several different modalities that can be used to downregulate tone. You use the one that you find you are the most skilled with, and then you can go from there. So for me, it was about that. It was about not necessarily looking at the methods, but saying, hey, look, it's really neurological, and there are several different ways to manipulate the nervous system. If you truly know how the brain works, a lot of what you're doing is changing stimulus and input. And when you know that, you can, I don't want to say it's a cheat code, but you can understand how to make better decisions and how to, you know, schedule things and warm things up. But going back to the hardware software issue, for me, it really allowed me to understand that if someone has quote unquote a hardware issue, we're talking about joints, right? We're talking about joints that cannot move for whatever reason, like a true sort of joint restriction. Whereas if you're looking at someone with, you know, a TED or tissue extensibility dysfunction, it's a little bit different. Now, I'm not going to go and diagnose, but my point is that understanding that you can change the software, changing the hardware is a little bit tougher, but surgeons are really good at changing the hardware. But I think for me, understanding the importance of the nervous system and how it plays a role in every single decision you make when it comes to training, I think for me, that was like a holy crap. There's more to it than just the best plyometric sequences and the best sprint programs and the best this and that. So for me, it was definitely like that R-phase course that just like blew my mind from a neurological standpoint.
Absolutely. I think, you know, both of us having the same sort of, you know, epiphanies come through. You know, Chad Waterbury's put out some great information on that, on the neurological aspects of training. And, you know, then progressing into working with Greg Rose and SFMA and looking at motor control in a really different way and starting to understand some of the patterning and stuff like that. I guess the second epiphany would be more, you know, I hate to be generic about it, but starting to work with Pavel. You're making the decision to start training via his methods with a couple of his books, and then making the decision to go to the second ever kettlebell certification with him in February of 2002, 22 years ago now. And 21 years of teaching with him, that has just continued to be a learning experience and an aha experience as time has gone by. But to go there and to be exposed to really understanding breath for strength, of the tension techniques, the high tension techniques, taking, you know, unlocking my hip flexors a little bit and going from, you know, jumping up and touching the bottom of the net to touching the rim within moments of each other, by just learning how to release something and be more powerful in my ability to produce force, led to a many inches increase in my vertical leap. You know, just that experience of realizing there was so much, you know, because when you know, you go and you learn training and there's a lot of basic training information that you'll learn as you go through like an exercise science or exercise phys program where you're gonna get embroiled into your three sets of 15 for endurance, three sets of 12 for hypertrophy, and you know, three sets of five or whatever for strength and whatever. Sort of these very generic recommendations that focus on sets, reps, maybe a little bit of exercise technique, inhale on the way down, exhale on the way up, and just not understanding how to upgrade the software, coming back to that neurological conversation again, upgrading that strength as a skill software to understand the high tension techniques and to understand how to use breathing to enhance strength and enhance techniques. man, next level for where it took me, not only professionally but personally in my own strength practice.
Yeah, and you know, my background is very similar to yours in that sense, because you were my first coach and then I had Dan John as my second. So, you know, I can't really say how much Pavel and his teachings, his principle-based teaching, has absolutely impacted the way that I look at program design and the way that I do things. And I think probably the most important thing that I've learned, and this is more recently, that is something that I learned sort of indirectly through Pavel and through yourself, is that you can get really strong, really, really damn strong with nothing at all from an equipment standpoint, but it's going to require a high degree of patience, strength, and movement competency and knowledge of programming, right? So look, you give me, if you say, Mike, I need you to get in best shape of your life right now and you can't touch anything except do body weight training, I could do that for you. I have the skill to do that for you. I can do pistol. I can do it myself too. You know what I'm saying? So my point is that, you know, a truly skilled individual can always find ways to do more with less. And I went into these throughout my career, I went down these rabbit holes of implements, kettlebells, barbells, right? You name it, gymnastics rings. And I just basically immersed myself in that time. And that's what I did. I just spent as much time as possible as I could with those given implements, and just basically buried myself and learned about how to use those, but applying the same principles over time and going down those rabbit holes and coming back out. But I think the idea of skill, and that's why we named our gym Skill of Strength, because early on, I forget where I heard it, but it was the Skill of Strength. And it was just like, And then actually very early on, skillofstrength.blogspot.com was my first blog. And before Skill of Strength was a gym, it was there. And I believe it might even still be out there. I don't know. But I remember that was the days of like following one another on Blogspot. But I think it made me appreciate truly the importance of skill acquisition when it comes to strength training. And that to me was like the idea of practice and skill acquisition, not just training and exercising. And yes, semantics, some people will say it doesn't really matter, but I think that it does matter, especially if you're teaching and you're coaching and you're trying to create an environment where you want people to understand the differences. I think it is important. So that for me is like a huge part of it for sure.
100%. And I'd say we were talking top three, I'm sure we'll probably go beyond that, but like going into the third one is actually more presentation related. You know, I was, when I first started presenting, it was a very organic in working with Pavel and the group of instructors that we had at the time, and the same 5 to 6 people showing up at every cert, and just kind of, we were all figuring it out as we went along in those very early years. And then I start teaching and presenting with Gray and with FMS, and I'd get a phone call and, you know, we need you in Chicago next week, and here's the thumb drive with the PowerPoint on it, or at that time Keynote, and go teach a level one. And then we were developing level two, and then it was go teach a level two. And you know, there was no speaker school, it was, you know, hit the ground running, go teach. So I found myself, and fortunately I had the ability to go do it at a pretty good level, because I've had that dysfunction since I came out of the womb. I haven't met very many strangers in my life, and I tend to be a very person that can walk into a room and spark up conversation and get things rolling, and I had a command of the material that allowed me to walk in, answer questions, and do pretty well. But I had no formal presentation skills or anything like that. So doing speaker school with Greg Rose, which was kind of a closed door thing for the FMS instructors and hopeful FMS instructors at the time, you know, that was an aha moment for me as well, in a couple of ways. Number one, I had gotten complacent and I needed to up my game. And it was something that allowed me to sit back and go, yeah, I could be doing this at a much better level. It led me down the rabbit hole of looking into presentation skills, learning, understanding learning better, understanding interleaving practice and how to present materials and chunk it so that people get more of the information. And so that was another kind of aha moment for me when I got up in front of everybody. I think you were there, Mike. Were you?
Which one? I was the one at TPI. No, that was Virginia. I wasn't at that one. I was at the TPI out in San Diego.
So I was this is the one in Virginia, and I got up to start my intro. One of the first people to, if not the first person to stand up and do it, and my voice cracked. I was that nervous. I was that nervous that my voice cracked, and looking back on it now, I could see everybody in the room, their face changed. Because I got up there nervous as could be, because as discussed on the last podcast, Greg Rose was there, one of the only human
it's
beings.
His kryptonite.
He's my kryptonite. One of the only human beings that intimidates me from a presentation standpoint is there, and I'm up presenting, my voice cracks, and everybody's face in the room changed. And that was a moment where I went, I'm good at this. I could be so much better. I've gotten complacent. I need to up my game. And so as a professional, that was one of those moments where I went, yeah, don't be complacent. And so that was an aha moment for me, because I was, you know, and if I am immodest for a moment, you know, I've presented and done things within FMS and the kettlebell world at the highest level for 20, 21 years. This was 10 to, I can't even remember now, 12, 14 years into that career, I'd gotten complacent. And that was the big smack across the face that I needed, to not be complacent and to pursue my craft on an ongoing basis. And so that was a great aha moment for me.
Yeah. And it's, I think, you know, an important part of that too, is the awareness to go, hey, look, like, I know that I've, you know, been doing this for a while, but having the aha moment, if you will, about going and saying, you know what, I can, I still got work to do. That takes a lot, because a lot of people, especially when they've made it to a certain point, they're like, I got it and I coast. But to be able to step back and go, I still got a little bit of work to do and still have things to focus on, is super important. And the same thing happened for me. It was a little bit different. And you had mentioned earlier about, you know, potential FMS instructors. When I went out to TPI, it was basically a tryout. You went out there and you were getting invited to speaker school, and it was basically a tryout. And you went out there and it was freaking scary as hell. And we'll do another sort of talk about that. But yeah, I'm in front of Brett, I'm in front of Greg Rose, I'm in front of Lee, I'm in front of Gray Cook. You know what I'm saying? And it was tough. But I was fortunate because I was able to get a lot of help and a lot of guidance from you and Diane. And as I started as an assistant, I had the opportunity to go out and teach different parts of the course, and you guys would give me feedback. And guys, look, if you want to be good at public speaking, you have to put your ego aside, and you have to be okay with people telling you, you need to get better at this, or this is something that you do, or this is something that you say far too often. And you joke about it, right? But if you truly want to improve, you have to be okay with someone saying, hey, look, if you want to be better, these are the things you have to focus on. And that can be hard for a lot of people, because a lot of people think they're really good. But that for me was really vital, because I had someone holding me to a high standard, and they were holding me accountable to do better. And it was pretty apparent if you didn't do a good job when you're in front of a crowd of 60 to 100 people, right? Because you know right away if you're not doing a good job or what. But having the feedback and guidance of being able to be like, hey, like a debrief, like, hey, Mike, you did this, how about this next time? And that was just really nice. I mean, the fact that I had that feedback was so important. But I will say, besides that, here's what I did when it came to public speaking. I wanted to get better at it. So I committed. I look back at it now and I'm like, I don't think I could ever do this again. But I did a Facebook Live teaching every Wednesday for 1 year. I don't think I missed one Wednesday. And if I did, I probably made it up. But I said to myself, I'm going to pick a topic. I'm going to go live and I'm just going to teach because I don't want to edit. I don't want to have to miss, you know, like go back and redo things. I just need to see how I respond teaching on the fly. Because look, when you're talking into a camera, there's no one there. There's no feedback. It's quiet. You maybe get a couple comments in there and maybe there's four people watching. It's like, huh? So you have to get acclimated to just going and figuring it out, kind of throwing yourself into the fire a little bit. And for me, I spent an entire year doing live teachings for 30 to 45 minutes. And that is how I, one, became better at public speaking, but two, I created a lot of the progressions in my teaching styles because I have to teach it to other people. So I think that's an important aspect of the development process is if you truly want to get better at something, you have to practice it a lot and take the criticism that goes along with it, but also help others with that task as well. It'll allow you to obtain it and understand it to a deeper level. So learn the skill. And then even if you teach someone else that skill just a little bit, as long as it's not incorrect or wrong, you're going to learn more about that skill throughout that process. So a little long-winded answer, but I think it's important to talk about.
Absolutely. See one, do one, teach one.
Yeah.
Has been the mantra in medicine and other areas for a long time. And I mean, that sounds way too simplistic, but there's a lot of truth to see one, do one, teach one, because you don't understand something till you teach it. And the only reason I have the command of the FMS materials and the Strong First materials and the things that I do step up and talk about is I've not only seen it 1,000 times, done it 1,000 times, and taught it 1,000 times. It's those numbers are low on the scale of what I've had the opportunity to do. So it's really where that is. So I think those are good aha moments. And the neurological conversation makes me think about in 95 when I'm the athletic trainer to school and Gray Cook walks in and I started working with Gray, and I'd be leaving after a 13-14 hour day and Gray'd be like, hey, what's the real function of the MCL? And I'm like, I don't care. And then Gray would be like, no, what is it? I'm like, I stabilize the knee. He's like, no, it's neurological. The MCL goes under stress. Type A nerve fibers, the fastest nerve fibers in the body go, ah, and it tells the adductors to fire so that you can protect your knee. Kind of coming around full circle between my early education and athletic training, all of the different rabbit holes that I went down from a training standpoint, and that neurological aspect continually coming back as being a foundation of knowing what's happening in the body and looking at those adaptations. We've kind of talked about it before of looking at a program and trying to understand the mechanical, neurological, and metabolic adaptations that I'm looking for from a particular protocol or program. It keeps coming back as a very, very important thing to have a command of.
Absolutely. So, well, we covered a few different things, and next week we're gonna be going back into the sciencey sort of application component of strength and conditioning. We've been, like we said, a little heavy on the philosophical stuff, but we're gonna dive back into some fun stuff. We're looking forward to doing that next week. Brett, anything you want to close us with, my friend?
There are some aha moments in your life that you're not going to realize are aha moments until they're passed. There's going to be things that it's not going to be the aha moment right at the moment. There's going to be things, and maybe this is more in your personal life or something like that. There's going to be people that you meet. There's going to be opportunities that you have. There's going to be things that you're exposed to that you're not going to realize that it's an aha moment until it's passed. And just stay open to the fact that those things could be coming around the corner at any moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm going to leave you guys with one thing. I'm pretty terrible at promoting a lot of the other stuff that I do, but I've been working on a course with Eric Tagati, and it's our PPD live course, Principles of Program Design. And we have a live course at SOS next, actually April 6th, Saturday from 9 to 5. And guys, we've been whittling away at this and sort of rebuilding the course. And I can honestly say it's some of the best work I've ever put together with Eric. From the way that we're talking about communication and building rapport to the basics of program design, to learning how to think on the fly and getting a little bit deeper into just various aspects of business. It's one of those things, if you're a personal trainer and you want to have an experience where you can spend a day and you can apply that stuff Monday morning, that's why I want you to come. Because a lot of the times we say, take it, practice it, learn it, then apply it. We're going to give you stuff that you can literally take back to your gym that week and apply it. And it's going to make a difference in your ability to communicate, to ask better questions, to retain clients. So guys, we've been hammering this for a while. And I mean, Brett, you've known me, you've known Eric for a long time, and we're pretty neurotic about putting stuff out there and making sure that it's quality. So guys, check out the link in the bio, in my bio, PPD, April 6th. Also, if you check out one of my posts, there's going to be a discount code in there. Maybe we'll send it out. But we'd love to have you. And hopefully we'll see some of you guys in the following week. So guys, we appreciate you. Do us a huge favor. Please give us a positive review on whatever platform you're listening to. And we will see you all on the next episode. Hey everybody, Coach Mike here. Thank you so much for your support. We truly appreciate it. If you could do us a huge favor, please give us a positive review on whatever platform you're listening to. And also, please share this with your friends, colleagues, teammates, and fitness enthusiasts. Thank you again for supporting the Minimum Effective Dose podcast.